We're here with Darren from Chainsaw Masochist.
Yep. G'day.
You met the guitarist from working at the same pharmaceutical company. What was the process of turning this meeting with a colleague into a four-piece band?
He was in the engineering department. He sort of looked pretty cool. He had a Citroen car and had Winkle picker shoes and dressed pretty well in them. So I started chatting to him, and he was into music and I was into music, and we're both into the Smiths full on, because they were still relatively newish around then. I think they would have been around 88 or 87 I met him. Yeah, and then I found he played in a band called Hip Singles, which I'd seen on TV, and I told him I was in the band and we had similar tastes. It sort of went from there, really.
Do you think the Smiths inspired you musically?
Probably more in a motivational way rather than a sound way. We didn't really sound like the Smiths. He certainly didn't sing like Murray had quite a low voice. Be more like Leonard Cohen, I'd say. But musically, we like the guitar jangle thing, and we're a post-punk sort of indie band, so we're definitely in the ballpark, but yeah, indirect influence.
Did you have any solid inspirations?
I don't think I was sort of not long, just straight out of secondary school, and I was into the Sex Pistols and the Buzzcocks, and my brother, who was the drummer, had very diverse tastes. He had a lot of Talking Heads and Romeo Void, and he runs a record shop now called the Musiquarium, and I think we had really diverse tastes, but it was all pretty much punk or post-punk, but not a single band, so the influences were pretty broad.
You released the song These Walls, which made it onto the BFM Top 10 straight away. What's your relationship with BFM like?
It's good. At some point after the start of Chainsaw Masochist, I ended up doing a show for a couple of years, 10 a.m. till midday on Wednesdays, and then I started an import show on Tuesday nights.
Oh, I had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, called The Electric Chair. I did that for a couple of years, and I got records from flying in, and my brother was doing the import section at Real Groovy, so I got stuff off him as well. So I had quite good sources, because all the good stuff was imported then, stuff like 4AD and Creation Records and Sub Pop. Used to put a lot of them straight onto playlists. Used to put them on the things called carts. Computers weren't up at the station then. They're sort of little quarter-inch tapes, so they're quite good quality, and you take it off a record and put it onto these cart machines. So I used to put it on cart and label it and then give it to the program director, and 9 times out of 10 it would end up on playlist. So I had quite an influence on the playlist with BFM then, because I was forwarding stuff to the PD.
Right, the playlisting's so different now with computers, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to be retrained if I am. But yeah, it was all turntables, and then later on CDs. CDs sort of came in while I was doing shows. So yes, I had quite a relationship with BFM, because the program director, Robert Southern, was at the time was a big fan of Chainsaw Masochist. That's how I ended up sort of having an in to BFM, and he was looking for another DJ.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
With Chainsaw Masochist, did you guys have a favourite gig that you'd played?
Yeah, supporting the Pogues for 2 nights. They were quite big at the time. That was like a packed out power station for 2 nights. That was really cool. And we went down really well. And the other memorable one was we played to a packed out town hall supporting the Chills when they'd just come back from overseas. And you know, when a band comes back from overseas, they always get a really big crowd.
Yeah.
For a few months. And that was their first gig when they were back. So, It was a biggie, and that was a really good crowd too, really young crowd. It must have been 15-year-olds or something.
That's cool.
They're totally into the support band sort of thing. We even got mobbed for autographs afterwards. Other time I experienced that was the Pogues one, which was again it was the kids doing that.
Yeah,
that was very very enthusiastic. That was cool.
I definitely remember being super enthusiastic and not knowing that you were meant to like play it cool around New Zealand bands.
Yeah, which is great.
Yes, like when I was like 13, I'd make T-shirts for the bands and stuff. And they were all a bit freaked out by it, I think.
I found it a real buzz. It was quite neat. Yeah, those are the two that stick in my head. The Pogues and the Chills at the Town Hall are the biggies, I think. Yeah.
Where did your name come from? Was it just some angst that you guys had building up, or...?
Murray, the singer, thought of that name, and he would often get quite excited about sort of things at a point in time, and he was quite taken by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre film, so it was sort of a wordplay on that.
I thought that might have been the case.
Yeah.
So the band dispatched in 1990, I believe. Why was this?
We started pulling in different directions was one reason, like in jam, because we jammed, but in the, you know, all made up our own bits. It was a band, and the singer was going through a Lemonhead acoustic guitar stage. At the same time, I was getting really into Sonic Youth, so that was sort of the opposite of what I was wanting. And then my brother was going through a sort of Boss Hog and Tool stage and doing these sort of 3-4 drumming, heavy drumming signatures. So we're all pulling it up. Slightly different directions, whereas previously we'd all been on the same plane, you know.
Right.
So we're all getting on really well, and still do. Like, we're still in regular touch. I did a gig with Ricky, the drummer, 2 weeks ago at the Thirsty Dog. He was playing in the new band he's got, and I saw Murray in November. He came to Super Turtle gig, which is the band I'm doing now. So we still sort of touch base, you know.
Very cool.
So there was no falling out, it wasn't quite clicking.
Yeah, so you took your Sonic Youth buzz and created new bands.
Yeah, I went to a band called Figure 60, which was quite a belter spacey, Sonic Youthy sort of band.
Cool.
And everyone went off and did different things. Drummer, oddly enough, went and played with country bands after for a while, for about a decade.
Oh,
played,
wow.
Al Hunter and then Greg Fleming, so... It was quite bizarre.
That's all I have for you, unless there's anything else you'd like to add.
I was told by Robert Southern that These Walls was number one for 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And that was some sort of record at the time. I don't know if that record still holds, but...
I don't know either, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But I think the records are quite murky going back that far, right? It's sort of pre-internet.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to, like, find... people who were in the top 10.
Like, I've got some printed stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, I looked on the internet and found nothing, but when I looked on, I've got, like, newspaper clippings and stuff, because they used to print the top 10 in various publications.
Right.
So I found out, you know, like, in 1990, we were number 6 with Reservations, and Straightjacket Fits was number 1 that week with Bad Note for a Heart.
Cool, so you just have, like, a little scrapbook with all these clippings flying around or something?
Yeah. And like in 1989, we were number 8 with a song, I'm not sure what it was, and the Pixies were number 1 with This Monkey's Gone to Heaven.
You were definitely around on the top 10s for quite a while.
Facing Up was number 10 when The Cure were number 1 with Lullaby, and Two Lonely People was number 11. In 1988, they switched it to the top 13 for a while. It was a little experiment, and Headless Chickens were number 1. On that one, when with Expecting to Fly, I've got all these press kits. They used to print the top 10 in sometimes in Metro magazine,
right?
And sometimes in a magazine called Stamp. There's quite a few music little fanzines and things, and there's one called Monitor magazine, which was very affiliated with BFM. Probably because there was no internet, you know, so there was more magazines going around.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, a lot of them printed the top 10.
So do you have all this information just, like, floating around your mind, or do you have your clippings with you?
No, I've got the clippings in front of
okay,
me.
Okay.
My memory's not that good.
I was just pretty amazed that you knew, like, was number 1 on each of your things. I was like, oh,
no,
wow.
Impressive. I've got a folder with all the clippings that I've kept, so.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.